WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It's football season. I swear I saw fake football everywhere over the weekend. I was up in Northeast Maryland in beautiful Cecil County. I'd never been to Northeast. Went to Woody's Crab House, ordered a crab cake along with a crab imperial, and because I can't get enough crab, a crab au gratin, believe it or not, and witnessed the Pittsburgh Steelers beating up on the poor Seattle Seahawks. My wife turned to me and said, "What do you think of the Seahawks?" I said, "Man, they might not win two games this year." Luke has been subjected to bad preseason football, including on Thursday night, and will be again on Sunday night, as we all will be, as the Ravens head out to Arizona. But in the meantime, baseball rules. And boy, they almost made news for the wrong reasons. On Sunday, I was at Monument City having a beer. I wound up at Schultz's in Essex. Shout out to Schultz's. Way to go. Fantastic food at Schultz's. And we watched the Orioles, and I looked up in the second inning. I'm like, they don't have a hit. And then the fourth inning, they have a hit. And then sixth inning, they have a hit. And then next thing you know, I'm like, I'm at Pizza John's, and I'm like, it's a perfect game. What the hell's going on here? So, Luke, I'll bring you into this because you've been watching a whole lot more baseball, and certainly not what we're expecting in the middle of pennant race and five games over 500. And here, you know, we're in the wild card and all that. A little awakening that, you know, every day it's more difficult as the pennant race gets going. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Well, and it's just a reminder of the day-to-day of baseball in general, right? I mean, we've seen playoff teams. We've seen really great teams be no hit before. So the Orioles came that close, you know, whether they're good or going to be very good by the end of the season, they came that close. You know, thank goodness for Jorge Mateo leading off the ninth inning. So full disclosure, I did not see a pitch of the game. I was out on the backfields in Owings Mills covering Ravens practice, but you know, trying to follow it as, you know, we can't have our phones out because, you know, that wouldn't be allowed out at practice, but trying to keep tabs on what was happening. And, you know, disappointing from the sense of the excitement of Friday night's win, knowing DL Hall's going to start Saturday. What was, to put it kindly, at best a mixed bag debut for DL Hall, which is fine, you know, in a big picture sense. You know, it's not the end of the world, and he's going to transition into a bullpen role, which is what I thought they would do with him, given some of the innings restrictions for him coming off of the injury last year. But you go into Sunday, you have a chance to win a series. I actually had a chance to hear Mike Elias on MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM Sunday morning, speaking in very glowing terms about this year's club and its chances, and talking about the fact that he stated belief after just a couple weeks ago saying that he didn't think there was a high probability of them making the playoffs. And look, you know, a general manager is always balancing the now with what's happening over the next few years. And we've talked about that, and you know, we'll continue to debate the merits of trading Trey Mancini and Jorge Lopez. And a lot of that will come down to what those players do.
Well, but, I mean, dealing those players indicates that at that moment, he didn't believe they were going to the playoffs this year, right?
I mean, well, I still think it's, you know, I don't think it's that cut and dried, but certainly he looked at that and said, look, Trey Mancini's going to be here two more months, is going to be gone. What is he going to add to our chances in the playoffs? You know, what percentage is he increasing our probability by keeping
what
him?
What do those 150 at bats look like, and who's going to have those at bats, right?
Exactly. And we talked about,
and if he turned his ankle, you'd play without him anyway.
Well, right. I mean, so there's always an array of outcomes, right? It's not just he stays and does great and leads him to the playoffs, and it's not just you trade him and your season's over, right? There's a wide range of outcomes in between those two kind of extremes. Same with Jorge Lopez, but you know, to bring it back to Sunday, they had a chance to win a series still. You know, Mike Elias is talking Sunday morning and, you know, talking about how excited he is for the future and what this offseason is going to look like. He acknowledged the possibility of Gunnar Henderson being brought up, who, you know, Baseball America, the latest outlet to kind of rank him as the top prospect in baseball.
A clock starter that's a little different than it used to be, right? Like in the old days, they would wait till May of next year.
Well, I mean,
if they were competitive right now, no doubt. Right.
I mean, if this team was on track to lose 95 games, we wouldn't be talking about Gunnar Henderson. We'd be saying, well, he's going to be here in May next year. You know, that's what you'd be talking about, but it is a little bit different. You know, I think it is interesting, as some people have noted, even though Mike Elias himself hasn't said this, some of the new incentives that have been put in place in terms of trying to deter service time manipulation, one of those being, if a guy wins Rookie of the Year, you get a draft pick. So, you know, there's a thought of, do you bring Gunnar Henderson up? And it would be, I think it's about another week or so to maintain his rookie eligibility for next year, while still bringing him up to contribute in September. So there are a lot of moving parts.
So you get a low one? Is that what happens? Like a 31 or 32, whatever that
would be? I don't think it's quite that good. I apologize for not remembering
what
it is exactly.
It's hard to have a rookie of the year. There's only one given every year. It's a free draft pick, and they don't have to give it away, right?
Right. And that's what you look to and say, okay, what's the probability, even if Gunnar Henderson becomes an all-star? I mean, let's face it, Manny Machado didn't win rookie of the year, right? I mean, as you know, you can look at some of the all-time great players didn't win rookie of the year. So how do you balance that with what I still look at, and we talked about this last week, in terms of this team offensively, I think could still use a spark, you know, whether it's Kyle Stowers, being called up and you play him at DH, Santander in right field. And, you know, you just flip those two on a given night, whether it is Gunnar Henderson coming up and you know, you move Taron Vavra to second base a little more full time, maybe Ramon Urias plays a little more second base in a platoon. But you know, you just kind of look at this thing and this is where we come back to the original topic of nearly being the victim of a perfect game on Sunday. Now you're looking at their lineup, and I know Mountcastle was out with, you know, getting hit on the wrist the day before. But you look at the bottom of the lineup, you have Odor, who's, you know, been hovering right around 200 all year. You have Austin Hayes, who's really fallen off and I don't think is fully healthy. We know he's dealt with some health, couple different health issues since going back to June when he was having such a fantastic year.
By the way, you talk about issues that mess up teams in the middle of a pennant. One minute you're in a pennant race, you're feeling good. Next minute you're almost getting perfect game. Then in the next minute, you got injured players.
Sure.
The Markakis injury years ago. You know, when things like that happen, it completely changed. Mountcastle's out 3 weeks. They got problems.
Well, and that's where it doesn't sound like he's going to be clear. Yeah, this sounds like more like a day or two kind of thing. But this is where we kind of come back to that same idea of you dealt Trey Mancini, you dealt Jorge Lopez. Doesn't mean the season was over. Doesn't mean you were completely tanking or waving the white flag, but clearly you made some moves that were motivated for the future. Doesn't mean you can't win right now. However, you do have to acknowledge you diminished the short-term outlook of your team, even if it was just by a little bit. Even if you said, hey, we think we can pick up the slack offensively for Mancini, and we think Felix Bautista is going to be a stud closer, you're still replacing those guys. So that's where I look at this thing and say, look, this has been a terrific season. This has been so much fun. They're ahead of schedule. You can throw out all the superlatives you want. However, are there other things you can do to make this team better right now? Are there things you can do to increase their win probability, their playoff probability right now?
So you get three games in New York in October, can go and try to win.
And that's where I look at this thing and I see what Gunnar Henderson is doing. He had another long home run on Sunday. You know, we've seen what Kyle Stowers has done. And I look at those two guys and say, look, I'm not saying that they're going to come up and rake and they're going to be your two best players. The reality is they could very well struggle. However, when I'm seeing Tyler Nevin still on this major league roster, and I'm seeing Brett Phillips on this major league roster, and I'm still seeing, even though late inning heroics aside, Rougned Odor being an everyday player still with someone who's hitting around 200, even though he, you know, did have a solid weekend overall leading into Sunday, I look at those spots and I say, I see some potential to upgrade that internally from some guys you have at AAA. And that's where I look at this thing and say, if you really want to maximize your chances, that's where I roll the dice a little bit and say, look, I understand Gunnar Henderson could come up and, I mean, Adley Rutschman struggled his first 3 weeks at the plate. We saw
Yo Hall. Yeah. Came up on Saturday. Yeah, I haven't mentioned him yet.
Right, right.
We talked about it for 2 years. He made his debut, and we're talking about his no-hit.
Well, I mentioned it. I mentioned it in passing about how they're going to use him out of the bullpen. You know, they're going to transition him in relief.
But that would say that they're up for the cavalry at this point.
Sure.
We talk about the cavalry. They brought the cavalry up on Saturday night. Here, I mean, here they go. And to your point, if you're going to bring one, bring them all and get the 200 hitters out of the lineup, he might say, we'll start kicking the ball around right now. And Odor's more of a leader than 200 represents in that clubhouse right now.
Sure. Well, and that's why I'm not going as far. You know, you see some fans say, well, DFM. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying move him into a bench role. Hey, there's a late, we've talked about his late inning heroics that sounds like a pretty darn good pinch hitter to come off the bench, which, you know, we've seen their late inning options here, even when they've been really good over the last 6-7 weeks. You know, you're talking about Chirinos and you're talking about Tyler Nevin and you know, Ryan McKenna. I mean, you're just
Chirinos, you know, is now the warrior here for us. You know, that's going to be the new nickname there. You know,
he is, but he's not much of a warrior with a bat at this point in his career. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade.
They almost got in a brawl the other day. I mean, they're doing it all since the last time we got together.
No question. I mean, and you know, not that I endorse that kind of stuff. Like I hate seeing the benches empty and all that, but was, you know, I think it did say something about the closeness, you know, tight knit nature of this group, that they weren't backing down. Like, you know, if Tampa Bay had issues with Chirinos calling time, they're like, well, tough, you know what? You know, certainly the Odor and Santander and a couple of those guys, you could
By
tell.
By the way, like, the umpire shouldn't have given it to him.
And that, you're right. And that was crazy.
That's really,
right?
I mean, that was, if I'm watching that, not in an orange.
Be mad at the umpire.
The umpire shouldn't have given him time and should have told him to get his ass back in the box. Yeah. And Tampa probably. You know, that's the way I would feel about it if I were Kevin Cash.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I mean, it's this silly baseball false bravado. I mean, we've talked about this for years. I don't want to go too far into that tangent. But the reality is, I mean, they lost 2 out of 3. I think it is very relevant to note things are different now with the 3 wild cards. We no longer have game 163 scenarios. We don't have those tiebreaker scenarios anymore. It just goes by... You know, look at it statistically in season series. Orioles have lost the season series to the Rays. They've already lost the season series to Seattle. They've already lost the season series to Minnesota. So what does that mean? They need to finish with better records than those teams if they're in a position where it's the last wild card spot. So what does that mean moving forward? Well, here come the Toronto Blue Jays, or here come the Orioles going to Toronto to take on the Blue Jays. We know they're going to play Toronto quite a bit down the stretch here. Got to make some hay against the Blue Jays, and you want to try to have a winning, you know, you want to have that series, a win, you know, that season series win in your pocket against them at the very least, because if you get into a scenario where you're talking about a tie, then, you know, it's not stacked up very favorably for the Orioles at this point. So
most important thing is to be vaccinated this week. You know that, Luke.
Sure.
Always the most important thing.
Well, and we know the Orioles, you know, after earlier in the season being without Keegan Aiken and Anthony Santander, they had made an announcement a couple weeks back that all players were vaccinated. So that's not going to be an issue as far as we know with, you know, unless there's, you know, anyone new to the roster, which I don't think anyone fits that profile. So
I've just seen a lot of teams going to Toronto without their players this year. It's kind of amazing.
Well, how about what? I guess Whit Merrifield was, you know, had been unvaccinated, and, you know, then he's acquired, and it's like, hey, you can play in Toronto, right? I mean, it's just like talking about Kyrie Irving with the Brooklyn Nets all over again. So, but, you know, needless to say, huge series, you know, huge opportunity for the Orioles. You want to get back on track after losing a tough series at Tampa. You know, Sunday was ugly, you know, and potentially it had a very close potential to being embarrassing. So at least they avoided that part of it. Loss is a loss. You lost 2 out of 3. It's not the end of the world, but got to get back on track here quickly. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. And it's the same thing for all these teams, by the way. You know, Minnesota scuffled, and, you know, now they're in a position where Cleveland's
in first
place.
You got to make sure it's not 2 out of 3 and 3 out of 5 and 5 out of 7. I mean, that's kind of where the slippery slope all this is. You got to have amnesia when you get your ass kicked 8-1, right? You come back the next day and you play. That, I mean, the best teams lose 8-1 in the World Series in game 1 and come back and win. So, you know, if you're a good team, you respond. I am of the belief, and I haven't said this out loud much, they're a good team. I mean, they've been a good team for 3 months. The manager is doing a credible job finally with some players. And now to our point, for the first time in a long time in our relationship, you're pissed at the manager. You're pissed at the GM. I'd like this player on the team. I'd like this bullpen. I'd like to see him start this guy. But Mueller's bitching about Rutschman batting second. So, you know, there's all of this baseball kind of conversation that enters the fray that never – entered it. The last time we talked about these things, there was no launch angle. You know, it was the whole nature of the game has changed in the last 6 years in a lot of ways. But the one thing that hasn't changed is that when the games start to matter, who's pitching, who's hitting, strategy, who's on the team, who's healthy. And in this particular team's case, the biggest story they have is we got great players in Norfolk. We've got quad A players at the major leagues that have been, you know, really good, you know, Jake from Major League kind of, you know, getting us through here, right? But there won't be disappointment if they don't make the playoffs this year, because you always say ahead of schedule. But I like that the GM's out popping off about, hey, we got 6 weeks. Kids hitting in Norfolk, let him come up here and hit. I mean, let's go win this damn thing, Luke. That's what we need to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you kind of say, yes, they are ahead of schedule. And no, I don't think this team has any realistic puncher's chance even of winning the World Series, even if they get into the tournament. But you still don't take that for granted. You don't know what's going to happen. And this is where I will cite the Houston Astros. Look at what they did in 2015, where that the perception was that was kind of a year ahead of schedule. They took a step back the next year. Now, they won the World Series the year after that, so it's not as though all was lost.
Cheating.
Sure, but still plenty of extraordinarily talented players also, I will say. You know, yes, acknowledging the cheating part. But I the point is, development and improvement is not always this steady, linear process where, you know, you don't want to squander this opportunity if you can maximize your chances right now from the standpoint of you don't know what's going to happen next year. You could have a key injury. You could have a couple guys struggle that you're not expecting this. So, you know, you just never know from that sense. That's why and I've said this all along, I'd love to see Gunnar Henderson. I'd love to see Kyle Stowers. DL Hall will be back. I want to see these guys, even if they struggle. And the reason why is that's still going to be part of the maturation process for them to then hit the ground running next year. You know, I'm still looking at this much more through a 2023 lens, but I want to see those guys now that if they have that 3 week period that Adley Rutschman had, for example, when he was called up, I'd rather be now than next year when I really feel, you know, because I'm assuming, and Mike Elias said again on Sunday that they're going to be more active in free agency and we're going to see the payroll increase. I don't think it's going to be a dramatic overnight increase in payroll.
Better figure out if that's John's idea or Lou's. That always sits
exactly. Exactly. Doing, so that's right. That's going to be a factor. There's no question about that. I'm not going to hide
from
that.
Screwed up ownership's going to be in the way. There's no doubt about that.
It's just going to be a matter of how much, right? Is it going to be a case where, and you know, my indication based on how Elias has spoken, I think he's going to be able to spend more money. It's just how much is that? You know, how much is more, right? You know, are we talking a few million?
Well, he has to listen to John right now because Mom and John Mom's running the show. They make no mistake about
it. This week, right.
This week, Mom's running the show. Who knows where it's going to be next year? But we are talking about taking on lots and lots of money for an organization that whatever the national cut is for them, it's something. But they're not making a lot of money. You know, even with these sold out nights, they've had two or three nights with a lot of people down there. Every other night, doesn't necessarily even feel like they're in the pennant race from a fan state. There aren't 23,000 people randomly showing up on a Tuesday night anymore. And I don't know that that'll even happen once the kids go back to school, because I do think they've cultivated a younger audience, right? I mean, the people you see at the ballpark and the people that go down there, they've tried hard on that. So the people that do bring their kids in September, when kids go back to school, it'll be a little different. I don't see them making money because of this run. So the money that goes into this, and I don't know how broke or rich or poor or dumb they are or how much dad's money's tied up, but I'm working under the impression, and it's probably really foolish of me, to think that they really are poor, that they haven't taken good care of their money, that these kids are in this – I know the lawyers are making money. But when it comes to reach for the till, whatever the till is, I mean – the till is a 3-year deal for $30 million with some half-ass pitcher, you know, that they would look at and say, we don't have that kind. I don't know how much is too much for them, but I know it's been a long, long time since they went to the mall to shop. And I think when the price of the groceries goes up and John has to, it'd be a very, because those kids want to win. They've been daddy's little boys. They got money. They got the one thing that they both would like to do is bank some pots and pans in October around here for their family name, right? Now, what it's going to cost them to do that, this year they're playing for free. If they get in, they're heroes. There's no problem. They didn't spend any money. But the spending money part, I am still unbelievably skeptical of that happening and happening wisely and happening peacefully. I mean, they might have a worse ownership situation than they've ever had because they have two brothers fighting. In the old days, it was just the old man fighting with whoever was sane, and the old man always won, right? So it was whatever. Chris Davis, here you go. Albert Bell, here you go. Cal Ripken, well, we'll issue a press release and call you a clown. You know, like they've done all sorts of crazy things, but fighting brothers, I don't think the fan base is ready for the what show is next after the Peter Principles of 30 years to say we have the ability to sign a player. It's $180 million. I find it very, very hard to believe. The boys have never signed off on anything important ever. This is their money, their mother's money, their family's money, the value of the franchise, whether Major League Baseball is really going to make them sell it or not, or whether John really thinks he's moving the team to Nashville one day or selling this and flipping it for a Nashville franchise, which I'm sure is in his mind, right? So there's all of this going on with the asset that's going to get involved once they get competitive. And that's right about now. They're competitive now. So
and that's what's going to be fascinating about this. I mean, right now, fans have zero interest in this Angelos brothers spat. I mean, they just don't, because the team is playing really well on the field. Now you have football and the Ravens back into, the discourse and capturing the imagination of the fan base and high expectations there. But it will become very apparent if, and I have skepticism too, I think they're going to spend. I don't know how much it's going to be. I think it could end up being very modest spending compared to where we've been the last couple of years, where you say, all right, well, oh, so you're increasing the payroll to $65 million. Well, wow, whoop-de-doo, right? I mean, we're not talking about a dramatic increase necessarily, but if you have the season in which they have, even if they fall a game or two short, let's say, let's look at that scenario where it's 1989 all over again, right? Fall short, you know, they go down to the last week of the season and they have a chance, but you know, they just lose a couple games that come up short, which there'd be no shame in that. There'd still be plenty of excitement about the season they had. But then you shift and pivot into the offseason and you look at it and you say, okay, well, they signed another Jordan Lyles type guy. And okay, they do have some players in arbitration they had to give bumps up in pay. And that's part of it too. But, you know, if you look at it and it's only a couple, you know, it's only, let's say, a step up from the last couple of years and not five steps up, then you are going to have fans kind of saying, well, what the heck? You guys didn't spend anything on baseball players over the last 5 years, and the team was really good this past year, and now these young guys are coming. Where's that big starting pitching acquisition, whether it's via trade or someone that's going to make a lot of money then, or signing someone, whatever? If you don't see those moves made, then it will be a case of what the heck is going on with the Angelos family? What is going on with the overall health of the franchise right now? Because they are ready to win now. And where's the commitment from ownership? So I'm right there with you in terms of the skepticism. You know, there are different degrees of that. Again, I don't think their payroll is going to stay totally flat, but is it going to be this dramatic increase? We'll see. You know, so they certainly, in a hypothetical, theoretical type sense, they should have saved a lot of money over the last 5 years in terms of what they've done. And people will say, well, you know, they've done what they've done internationally. You know, they've done more with the farm system. And look,
you know what I think they did, Luke? Because I may write about this one day. And at one point, we're going to go to audio to text, and this stuff will show up in my words and writing. I think the franchise was so far in debt to the father after what happened in the beginning, and then Masson money came out of it. And then they stopped making money again 6 years ago, that they were over their heels. Expenses, spending more than they were making for a little while with Chris Davis, that they pulled this thing back and tried to get the company in order, because there were long stretches before Masson happened where the old man was $25-50 million a year deep out of in his pocket. I'm talking when the franchise was a $110 million payroll, and they were struggling. Not 260 what the Yankees are now and getting up on $300 million. I think that they had some structural issues in regard to Daddy's other assets, in regard to the law firm, and it stopped making money. The law firm just went from hundreds of millions of dollars a year of revenue to nothing, and then Dad's eating pudding. I think they've got a lot of financial thing. They own a $1 billion asset, but they're not billionaires. You know what I mean? And this was never supposed to be a $1 billion asset. It was $173 million asset that was bought for $145 million that, quite frankly, ownership did not make a lot of money on this until the Masson money started coming. The Masson money is where the family should have been putting $50 million a year aside every year. But like Bisciotti's not making a lot of money on the team right now, but he's making $100 million a year. It just every year, the Broncos are $4.5 billion, right?
Yeah.
So for these guys to ever cash, they have to sell.
Right.
And part of this that they could ever afford $150 million payroll now, they would just need to sell a whole lot more tickets and sell a whole lot more sponsorships and have a real team president. I don't mean Sashi Brown. I mean a real team president that's from here, that does business here, because the suite sales, the expensive premium seats, the media money, all of that is dried up for them. All of that is – it's like dried up like a – against what 1993 would have looked like from a revenue standpoint for seats, for assets, for concessions, for parking. Their big nut now is this is the national money, like football used to be, right? It used to be much more local revenue, Yes Network, Nesson, and all that. They figured out how to make money. Masson is not going to be a money tree for them the next 10 years. So I don't literally, Luke, I mean this from the mm-hmm. heart. I don't know that they can get to $130 or $150 million without legitimately selling 30,000 tickets at games, without legitimately having real big sponsorships and a television rating number that makes those commercials not the pillow maniac, like real commercials. I mean, I know a lot about this. I've studied this for 30 years.
Right.
I do really worry about their money, what they've done with their money, how the kids might say, I got $100 million annuity. Or I'm not touching that to give money to Adley Rutschman. Sorry. I'm just not going to do that on behalf of my family. That's going to be the tough part, because this is where Bisciotti is right now. As much as we are Lamar said this and Lamar, this is about Steve Bisciotti saying, I'm not giving that kid $240 million guaranteed. I'm just not doing it. He runs into linebackers. He may think the same thing I think and think, you know what? Just not – we're not going out over our skis on any one person. And who knows what John and Lou – first off, they'll never speak again, right? I mean, like that's pretty obvious that the two of them getting in a room and making a family decision on a $100 million yeah. baseball player, that's not happening. Mama has been afraid of this from the beginning. Like – she's intimidated by all of this. John's now writing her legal notes, right? So when it comes time for Mike Elias to go in and say, I want to – if it's bump payroll from 30 to 60 million, maybe they could do it, to your point. Like, they're getting that from Major League Baseball. I know that. They're whole at 60 or 70 million. They're not going broke doing that. But there is a chance that they would just not financially have the skis – to really sign real players right now until they start getting money and until they can look at next year's revenue, because they can look at next year's revenue right now, project all they want. But your mom and your sister and your brother-in-law, they're not going down there and dumping $400 on a Sunday to go to games. And that's kind of the playing rate for this now, is getting people like your mom who haven't been in a while back.
Yeah.
And thinking next year, those empty seats are going to be full because we're going to have Adley fever and we're going to have DL Hall fever and we're, okay, but that's at the end of the day, paying these baseball players still is about asses in seats, revenue, all of that. And I'm really worried about that for them. I really am, because it's not hocus pocus. It's just people can get excited and say, I'll put the game on TV. But coming back and giving them money, I haven't given them money a long, 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 long time. And there's nothing they can do to get money, real money from me. I mean, more than I talked about his season ticket, who are going to be the people that give them money? And they're going to need money for these baseball players for Rutschman 4 years from now too.
Well, but I also think they have to expect some. I mean, if no one's going to come, then fine. Well, then they should just move then, right? I mean, if no one's going to come, right? I mean,
seriously.
I say that tongue in cheek, but they'll get a boost. They'll get a bump. Is it going to be going from where they've been to suddenly you're averaging 35,000 a night? No, of course not. I don't know if they're ever going to get back to those days. To me, it would be more in the case of, instead of drawing, an announced 7 or 8,000 a night, which is kind of where their low point is at where they are now. Can you get that to the lowest night is 15? Let's say
that's a big jump. That's double.
But I'm just,
that's big, though.
But and a lot of that would do, okay, what's your base from season tickets? You know, it's kind of been what, 7, 8, or wherever it's been the last few years. You know, can you get that up to, I don't know, 12? And then can you have more short term, more walk up types, you know, more people just buying individual tickets during the week, you know? But that also goes into what are you doing to market the team? We've talked about this. I mean, giveaways and all those different ticket deals. They've done some of that stuff. Unfortunately, some of the things that I see now are things they should have done 3 or 4 years ago. And maybe you wouldn't have gotten it to this point, even with how bad they've been. So you know, they're going to have to work hard in that sense. But I would also say this is where I keep coming back to what my hope is the state of the franchise from a baseball operation standpoint, from the major league level, farm system, the technology they have in place, player development, an academy coming in the Dominican, all those different things that they have done, which they have made investments, but it's not the same as a $150 million payroll a year type investment. I am hoping still, and that doesn't mean it's going to happen now, but I'm hoping it could still be in the not too distant future, that this franchise looks far more attractive, that maybe there is a buyer down the pike that looks at this and says, I think it can work here. And I think the people in place here, talking Mike Elias and company, have built something. And I feel like this can be a sleeping giant, not in the way that the New York Yankees are a giant, but certainly a team that can be a healthy, successful mid-market kind of team if it's done right and if we make good decisions. And if I come in and I have a financial commitment, then I want to win, right? I mean, ultimately, the best owners are the ones who really, really, really want to win. And they're not just thinking about it as a business, right? They think about it in terms of, I've got ego and a competitive nature that I'm going to spend and I want to win. And if that means my profit's not quite as great as it would be if we looked at it strictly from a bottom line sense, then that's okay.
That's who Peter Angelos was in 1997, yeah. 98, 99, and fighting with George Steinbrenner.
Yeah.
I'm re-releasing the Peter Principles so everybody can have the real true history, not my history, the history as told by the New York Times, Sports Illustrated, the Baltimore Sun, on and on and on. I lived through it. I was on the radio through all of it. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put that out for people to say this is where they've come from, and where they are right now is exciting. Luke will be monitoring all things in Toronto, also monitoring the Ravens out in Owings Mills. You can follow him. Baltimore, Luke, you can follow me anywhere I am, including Salisbury with the mayor of Salisbury, Jake Day, this week. Also going to be with our senator, Ben Cardin, on Friday in Ocean City for Mako. So back and forth, Eastern Shore, lots of crab cakes, lots of breweries, all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill Window Nation and the Restaurant Association of Maryland. Luke, I haven't gained any weight yet. I checked the scale. I'm looking. I'm halfway through this thing, but I'm mixing in a salad. We'll be back in Baltimore next week. Going to be in Eldersburg next Wednesday at Liberatore's. Also next Friday in Westminster at Rock Salt Grill. And we are ending the tour on the 30th of the month at Costas Inn. We're having a special breakfast edition with the next governor of Maryland. Wes Moore will be joining us after the current governor is too busy running for president to bother with me on the 30th of the month. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.